League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We could leave any day, call for help. We were guides, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Me and more, breathe in, breathe out. Never mind, it was time. Number nine, let my lies feline with a death wish. Be right, didn't have no name on the guest list. Hold on, we're destined.
If you didn't see this earlier, Mack Brown got fired. Since we're doing Misery Index for college football, losing to Boston College probably sealed his fate. Mack Brown had planned to come back. They had won three in a row. He felt pretty good. He thought to himself, I beat Boston College. I beat NC State in the year. Those teams aren't that good. I can finish the year after a disappointing start at maybe 8-4. Instead, he's now 6-5. And UNC is going to fire Mack Brown. Now, people in Chapel Hill may love Mack Brown, but thought, hey, time was up. Maybe fans for that program across the country are like, yeah, had to be done. AJ's probably not going to like this from his favorite football team. Jerry Jones, who's, you know, been a bit of a thing on 105 through the fan this year. I don't think that's crazy at all. That's not crazy. What's that in response to? Whether Mike McCarthy could receive a contract extension?
I saw something about it on First Take they were saying. I didn't hear what they said, obviously, but that's Jerry Jones for you. That's why, low-key, I want the Giants to beat them just so like you can just see how this team needs a whole roster overhaul, coaching staff overhaul, everything. But Jerry Jones, you know.
So while Mack Brown got fired for losing to Boston College, all of a sudden Mike McCarthy's job may be safe because he beat the Commanders? Mike McCarthy has been here. Mike McCarthy is an outstanding coach. Mike McCarthy has been there, done that. That's what he said, not been here. Been there, done that. He's got great ideas. Haven't seen much evidence of that recently. That's my editorializing. That's not what Jerry Jones said. So the bottom line is, in no place in my body language or anything else, have you seen an indication about what we're going to do, what we're going to be doing relative to the staff at the end of the year? And we shouldn't. We've got a lot of football left. Jerry thinks you can make a run.
Of course he does.
They play the Giants, followed by the Bengals and the Panthers. You could be 7-7.
That's
7-7.
Bro. What, and then we're going to be drafting like close to the 20s.
Jerry sees an opportunity to ride Cooper Rush into a playoff spot.
He does the opposite of what makes sense. So,
yeah, well, if like you put it, if like you pointed out, we need Cooper Rush to revert back to Texans Cooper Rush, the one we saw against the Texans.
Exactly.
Let's have the whole team do that. But the opponents aren't exactly that strong. The Bengals, if they're still in the race, right, are talented enough to put like 40 on the Cowboys. Yeah. That could happen. But the rest of the way, don't look now. Cowboys could be in it. Got to get a big win on Thanksgiving Day at home. Jerry's going to be very excited. You know what? Like you said, not just lose. Get embarrassed by the Giants at home.
Yeah.
In his showcase game.
Or put Trey Lance out there. Let him throw 5 interceptions.
Well,
that'd be cool.
He's not going to actively try to lose a game but by putting Trey Lance out there. But get embarrassed in your game on national TV with the whole NFL world watching by the Giants, by Tommy DeVito of all players, and then you got a real shot of Mike McCarthy not making it through the year. But right now, Jerry's not so sure that Mike McCarthy won't be back. It's unfortunate for the Cowboy fans and fortunate for everyone else. All right, Mac Jones, Mac Brown might be miserable. AJ's now miserable. let's get to the misery index in college football. I think number one on the list for me is Ole Miss. When the starting quarterback's breaking down in tears, you go at the top of the list. If you didn't see the game against Florida, Ole Miss, well positioned to make a college football playoff, just went out, beat Florida, beat Mississippi State. Maybe you don't play in the SEC title game, so you don't even get a third loss thrown on your resume, and you're 10-2, firmly cemented. Instead, in a game where Florida had DJ Lagway back for the second consecutive game, Jackson Dart had multiple opportunities late to win that game. He threw an awful pick in the triple coverage into the end zone. This was probably 30 or so yards out, 35 or so. He throws a deep ball. The guy wasn't open, no chance, and it lands into a waiting Florida safety's hands for one pick. And then getting the ball back with another opportunity, he throws another bad pick. No one from Ole Miss had a chance to make that play. The same guy who picked off the first pass picks off the second pass, and they go down. So on two consecutive drives, they throw picks, and he's bawling his eyes out. So for anyone who thinks, I don't know if I've met many people outside of like college football pundits that people kind of do that for a living. I haven't met many people like, hey, the playoff sucks. I don't want more teams in the playoff. For the most part, it feels like everyone's in on this. They're like pundits and people do podcasts who might take issue with it, but I couldn't disagree more. And to watch, not that I care about it, not that I want to see a kid cry. I think I mentioned it yesterday. That's how much that game meant. In another world, that's just Ole Miss blowing a game to Florida, and now they have their rivalry game against Mississippi State to kind of clean up the year, and maybe they make a New Year's Six game, maybe not. But in this world where you got a shot and you believe you're still in the national title picture, to lose it that way, all the drama in the world, all the drama, and Ole Miss goes down there. Let's head on to Kansas City, Missouri. A lot of people were talking about that Colorado team as having a shot to maybe even get a bye in the playoff. And they're still in the race because there's a chance that like West Virginia could make it to the Big 12 title game in tiebreakers where everybody has three losses in conference. That's how muddled that conference is. But it was kind of straightforward for Colorado. You win out and you're in. Instead, they drop a game to Kansas. They could not stop the run. Like Travis Hunter had his two touchdowns, cemented himself as the Heisman winner, unless, I don't know, maybe they lose Oklahoma State and losses start to matter. But for him, that they don't. And I said yesterday, how you take a big-time cornerback out of the game? Well, people used to run right at his head coach and force him to tackle. In this case, we'll just run at everyone in Colorado and see if anyone can stop him. And no one did. That was a Kansas team people thought they'd see. That was a Kansas team who's now, in three consecutive weeks, been unranked, under 500, and beat a ranked team. They are the Grim Reaper for college football playoff hopes in the Big 12. They are taking people out one at a time, and Colorado was the latest example. Colorado was still in it. It's just very complicated for them now, and they've got Oklahoma State. So Jalen Daniels, the rest of that Kansas team, credit to them, man. And Lance Leopold for getting them to fight back. You could just die on the vine some years when your team isn't living up to expectations. But they've beaten Iowa State at home. They beat BYU on the road, and then they beat Colorado in Kansas City, and they haven't really had a real home field advantage all year. They've been playing on the road, but at home throughout, just in different parts of the state, of whether it be Kansas, mostly Missouri. I think they played a game at the MLS team's home park, and then they played games where the Chiefs play. And Devin Neal went for 207 and three TDs. Colorado had no answers. I don't know if Oklahoma State can duplicate that with Ollie Gordon, but there's a formula. And Colorado had been pretty good defensively this year, not on Saturday. They couldn't get stops. They couldn't tackle anyone. And they get beat up 37-21. So they're on the list just for losing a shot at potentially making the playoff. Still in it, but it's a little tough. You got to throw A&M on there. We talked about it in the last segment. That's the game they were favored slightly to win. And after taking the lead, I thought they're going to win that game after bouncing back. But I ran through it already. They dropped the 2-point conversion to lose, and they still have all their hopes and dreams ahead of them. Though you beat Texas, you beat Georgia, you make the playoffs. So they're on the list for the loss, but it doesn't kill their year. And I like them against Texas. I haven't made a my final decision on who wins that game, but I think I like them at home in a bounce back. It's very A&M to lose to Auburn, then beat Texas at home, and then we'll see against Georgia. Of course, throw Alabama on the list. You can't lose to Oklahoma that way. That's a 3-touchdown loss to an Oklahoma team who didn't have any interest in passing the football because they don't have anyone to catch it. Their last remaining receiver they thought they could count on got hurt in that game too. That's been a problem for them all year. Injury issues at wide receiver, and it cost them again. Well, it didn't cost them, but they lost another one against Alabama. Jalen Milroe is an interesting player, and Alabama is too. They go how he goes. If he don't play well, they're not going to win. Then it might be simple to say because he's the quarterback, but teams can find ways to win if their quarterback doesn't play well. He has to be kind of great for them to win. And I didn't think it needed to be done against Oklahoma because they can't score. But he threw a pick six. He threw another interception that set up Oklahoma in favorable field position. All-around disaster for them. I think they're out. I don't think it matters what happens the rest of the way unless there's complete chaos. That's a 3-loss team who's lost to Vanderbilt and Oklahoma on the road. Those are two, I'm going to be kind, Oklahoma, average football teams. Vanderbilt's okay. They have the win against Alabama, obviously, but they could be a 6-loss team. They're probably going to be a 6-loss team. They have Tennessee. Of course, an upset there invites more chaos. But so you have losses against Oklahoma, who just became bowl eligible with their win, and then a potential 6-loss Vanderbilt team, and then obviously they lose to Tennessee. That team doesn't make the playoff, even with 12, unless the SEC waves their big stick around and says, hey, if you don't put them in over Indiana or an SMU, we and you are going to have a problem because we'll leave this thing. If we're talking about merit, Alabama doesn't belong. Not as a 3-loss team when they're being compared to 2-loss teams or even depending on where Indiana falls, a 1-loss team. Indiana has Purdue to finish. They're gonna finish with 1 loss. Alabama can't make this playoff. I say that, but watch. Watch it happen. Watch it happen. And I speaking of Indiana, they had a rough one. They can go on the list, too. They lose to Ohio State in a game where their special teams was a disaster. They took a 7-0 lead, and that was the last time they did anything offensively when the game mattered. They were bad outside of that drive and until the last drive where the dogs were being called off. They gave up a punt return to Caleb Downs. They dropped a punt deep in their own territory to set up another Ohio State drive. Just special teams killed them. Kirk Cignetti was asked after the game if they were still playoff worthy, and he just said, what do you mean? Of course we are. How dare you? He was like, what are you asking that question for? Of course we're. That's a stupid question. It was his attitude. Gave him a little smirk. So I think they'll make it. They were in trouble until the SEC had their events, their calamity of events on Saturday afternoon. So that's pretty much what it is. Unless, AJ, you can think of one. I mean, the Cougs weren't great, but I don't know if you want to put them on there.
Yeah, we can talk about it a little bit because I went to the game too, that Houston blue and all that looked cool, but still ended up not doing anything. Y'all talked about them earlier on the John and Lance show. Willie Fritz, he's a good coach, but they need a quarterback too. In my opinion, they're not going to matter until they get a quarterback, and it's hard to get one in the NIL era that's really good, like, you know, just change a program. So that's
one of my I wonder if they're willing to bid on one that might become available.
Right.
Or do they stick with the options they have on the roster? We know one person they're not sticking with. They did fire their OC.
Right.
That happened. That news broke this morning. The Cougs, after what had been a tough – now they have one more game left against BYU on the road. But it's been a tough offensive year for the Cougs.
No, for sure. And then I got a notification on my phone when that happened that they only averaged 13.6 points per game, the lowest in FBS. I didn't know it was that bad.
Yeah. That's insane. They have the two scoreless games in the Big 12, but I went through the numbers earlier. They just don't put up a lot of points. 3 against Arizona, 17 in a win against Utah, 24, which isn't a big number in college football, in a win against Kansas State, the 10 this past game in their Houston Blue game against Baylor, the 14 against Kansas. And of course, I mentioned the two games where they don't score, right. So they had to make a change. I went down like the Wikipedia for Willie Fritz and the OC that's no longer there, and I can't find a crossover. I'm not sure why he thought that was a good option.
Yeah,
but that didn't work out.
I
so
don't know why
he had to make a decision. It's a call you don't want to make this early in your tenure, but let's not cement a bad decision by keeping him around. So Kevin Barbet, no longer the OC at the University of Houston after you heard AJ lay it out, averaging the worst in the FBS as far as points per game.
Yeah.
That's a tough spot. That's not that they've always been explosive, but we think of Houston. We think of fast guys running around scoring points. It's part of it's been part of kind of the lore around Houston, whether it be going back to Kevin Sumlin and obviously Art Briles and Dana Holgorsen for all his issues. They did at least sometimes have entertaining offenses. There were struggles there too, but this was the lowest that we could remember, and that's why they had to make the change. Just think, I mean, I didn't even mention the 90s and the Klingler and Ware eras where all they did was score points. Who?
Andre Ware went to the same high school as me too. Yeah.
So it's been a long history of exciting offenses, and this was the worst in, well, modern history for the Cougs, and they had to make a change. So that happened. So there we are there. Misery index complete. Throw the Cougs on there. But they did do something that might make people happy. They got rid of the guy who had made them miserable all year long, their OC. So we'll see if there's better things ahead for that Cougs offense in 2025. One more game for them in Provo against a BYU team who's still alive for the Big 12 title. Okay, we'll get to some Rocket stuff when we come back. We'll tell you the fine for Fred VanVleet. It's a big one. I'm surprised he didn't get suspended, but he's available tonight. But he did get popped, and we'll talk about that when we come back.
This is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
I think he's turned some down that he had been taking, so we don't want him to start second-guessing those. Reading the defense, how they're guarding him, you know, I think he can improve in that a little bit more still, and he has at times, but when they're not falling, just not go away from that confidence-wise. I think him getting to the basket, you know, teams are mixing in some unders on him, so we want him to take those shots, and then once he's made them, as you've seen, it's opened up the lane for him to get to the basket, but also draw attention and get guys shots. So wanted to stay confident there, continue to read the game, and go the way he has to end the last season and the start of this season.
That's Ime Udoka on Jalen Green. After a great start to his year in that five-game stretch in the month of October where he was averaging nearly 28 per game, 40% from three, 43% from the field, those numbers have dipped drastically. And it started like almost immediately. There wasn't a gradual change. His final game in October against the Mavs, he didn't shoot great, but it wasn't awful. And he got 9 of 21 for 23 points. The next game, the Warriors game at home, 2 of 13, 7 points. And while that was probably the low watermark for him in November, things haven't gotten much better. Look at all the concert dates. 2 for 13, 5 of 15, 6 of 14, not bad. 5 of 14, 6 of 17, 6 for 15, 7 of 21, 4 of 11, and so on and so on. Probably his worst month as a Rocket. And maybe you can go through the months since he's been here. But as far as expectations coming off that March last year and the start of this year, the downturn has been, I mean, almost impressive how bad he's been compared to how he started. It's like the calendar changed and he was done for. So he maybe the month of December he'll flip back. Still got a game or two in the month of November before that happens, a back-to-back for the Rockets. They go to Minnesota tonight, Minnesota team who's desperate for a win after going into Boston and playing well but losing. They didn't get a shot off late. They've got some issues there. Their defense, I think, is the biggest problem for Minnesota. They are never going to be a great offensive team when Gobert is taking up space and Julius Randle is a guy who's going to pound the rock into the floor and finally get a shot up. So they're not ever going to be great, but their defense is what they depended on last year. I was listening to a podcast. They've gone from first in the league in defense last year to their middle of the road this year. And that leads to the 8-8 record. The Rockets have them. That's a talented team they have to face. And then they go to Philly, which won't have Joel Embiid, won't have Paul George likely, but Jared McCain and Tyrese Maxey will be available. We talked about Reed Sheppard as a potential rookie of the year before the year. That's long gone. Jared McCain from Duke he played there for 1 year. We saw him up close and personal when Duke knocked out the Cougs. He's played really well. That's a small backcourt right now for the Sixers, but they're pretty productive. Maxey's working his way back from his injury, so talent-wise, you would say it's a bit of a tough stretch for the Rockets. Just looking at it before the year, you thought, wow, that back-to-back is going to be a rough one. Now, you can go get them. You can go get the Wolves in Minnesota. Now it's a back-to-back, which makes it tougher, but the Sixers can be had, too. The Sixers don't play tonight, so they'll be rested and at home, but a split, I think, is reasonable. Before the year, you think, just don't get blown out in these two games. But now, you can go into Philly and win. It looks like Joel Embiid's a game-time decision. At least he's – so maybe he plays. I would doubt it. And Paul George is listed as 1-2. So maybe you get one out of those two and make the challenge a little bit more difficult. But I'm just going to need my shooting guard to shoot better. Can I ask for that? Can I ask – hey, I'm not even asking you to be a good shooter. Just don't be a terrible one. Don't have the two worst shooting. Don't have the worst shooting backcourt in basketball. Am I good? I don't have high expectations for this Rocket team as far as those two guys are concerned. I know what they are. Fred VanVleet's been in this range for the entirety of, well, his Rocket tenure, and he's been around there for a while now, being a guy who is 40% from the field in that 36 to 39 range from three. That's who he's been. I can't have both of you guys be there. That's, something's got to change. I wouldn't even call it bad shots. I don't think they're getting awful shots. I think they're just guys who can't knock shots down right now.
Just not efficient, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, willing to take the shots. We won't say they're not. We won't say they're bashful. We just can't expect them to go in. But 12-6 is 12-6, right? And John brought up the numbers, which were surprising, that the Rockets starting five is one of the best starting fives together in basketball. I guess it should be surprising considering the record one game out of the West, at least when I checked yesterday. But overcoming their inefficiencies from the field and the guys who had the ball in their hand the most being that bad at putting the ball in the basket, credit to that entire team. And even you throw in Şengün. Şengün's been fine, but he ain't all-star, baby Jokic-level Şengün. It's not the guy people thought we were going to get with another year. He's been okay. There have been some down moments for him. He's fine. There's been a lot of that from him this year where he ain't a negative, but he ain't the guy who deserves a nickname. I mean, close to calling him Enes Kanter if he doesn't pick it up.
In this thing.
I mean, if you look.
Freedom now, I think.
Yeah, Freedom Kanter. Yes, it is. But when he was putting up numbers for bad teams, he was Enes Kanter. And Şengün has a higher trajectory than that. But look at Kanter when he got minutes before, obviously, he turned into a bit of a political story more than a basketball player. Think back. Kanter put up numbers. He was a double-double guy in that Şengün range. I'm going to need more from baby Jokic. The Rockets are fine. And I think it just speaks to what they could be if they got improvement from that backcourt and Şengün started playing to the level that we think he can. They could be, as the kids say, AJ, a problem.
Yeah.
They could be a problem. They right now, I think they're interesting, and we'll see how long they can play at this level with how poorly their backcourt is playing. But you get a little boost from those two, Van Vliet and Green, and Şengün picks it up. Then we're talking about, can they have an OKC type of regular season from last year where all of a sudden this team is winning 50 games, which I questioned before the year, but they've gotten off to a good start. I do think the schedule and the softness of it has played a part. I mentioned Fred VanVleet and his lack of shooting. That's an issue, and what happened Saturday night was an issue when he got thrown out of that game late, and he got hit with 50K. 50K seems reasonable when you go, you a bitch, and you a B-A-N. I think 50K is reasonable. I think he got off a little lucky. I thought a suspension might be coming, all the pointing he was doing, but it's all right. He's available, and that's all that matters. 50K off that $40 million he's getting paid, I ain't got no worries about Fred VanVleet and his ability to deal with that.
Exactly. I thought he was going to get like a LaMelo Ball type of fine. Remember?
Yeah. LaMelo, the what did he say? No I forgot exactly.
No,
oh,
yeah.
I forgot. Yeah, I can't say it. Yeah. Actually, I'm glad I forgot because I can't say it. He said, no Cuomo. It rhymes with something else.
Right.
Yes. He said that and got hit with the 100K and then said, I don't care. I'm going to write that in my Instagram story. You can't find me for this. So he doubled down on it. He got that after a game. He said, load it up. And then, of course, I know that sounds a certain way. So I gotta tell you, I didn't mean it that way.
He
I guess
just said pause.
I guess. Yeah. One of those. I mean, you see pause all the time and doesn't get people fined. But he said the other thing and got hit with the 100K. Once again, another guy you ain't got to worry about as far as his money is concerned. So Fred VanVleet got his. He'll be available tonight as the Rockets try to bounce back. So it'll be interesting to see how this team handles it. I wouldn't call Minnesota desperate, but they are looking to get back on track. And then Philly, they are desperate. They have an advantage there, being at home, and you're coming off the Minnesota game. If they could sweep these two, great. I hope, like I said, just to get one out of the two from this interesting stretch of games. When we come back, we will continue with getting you ready for the rivalry. You know the game is here on Saturday night, but do you remember some of these moments? We played Ricky Williams breaking the rushing record from 1998. Well, we gotta balance it out, so there'll be an Aggie moment. We played a Longhorn upset. We'll play an Aggie upset. And because the rivalry hasn't been around since 11, these are games that might not have had HD cameras, but they happen. They happen. So we'll play the sound from them, and we'll probably do some more tomorrow too. But we'll do the Aggie moment when we come back. And obviously, all this is brought to you by Rebecca Creek Distillery. But first, I do want to talk about MyBookie. You can go to mybookie.ag. Maybe you want to put some money down on the game. Any game will do. From college football, the NFL, NBA, they have it all. International soccer, it's all there for you to take advantage of. You just go to mybookie.ag, use that promo code BET975, and remember, they will match that deposit from $0 to $1,000. They'll match it. So you don't even have to spend a lot to get started. Throw in 50. Maybe you only want to start with the 100. They'll take care of you when they double up. And Thursdays, it's risk-free Thursdays. It's a big day in sports that Thursday. You got the NFL, a triple header that you can take a look at. Maybe you want to take your chance at some college football. And, of course, they have the live casino option too. So if you like blackjack or poker, you'll have a dealer on screen dealing you cards. They have it all for you there at mybookie.ag. From the promo code BET975 to the tiers that they have, the promo tier. So it's called MyBookie Plus. So it's the more you bet, the more chances you have to win prizes. It's all there for you. Take advantage of it. Go to mybookie.ag. And remember, you can bet on anything, anywhere, anytime with MyBookie.
This is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
Gibson is the tailback. It's been McGee keeping the ball for the most part on these third downs. It's been critical. He's going to do it again. And he's got a first down and a touchdown. Texas A&M. Devin Snead steps up, throws, and it's intercepted. And that's the ball game. Texas A&M's got it back again. Picked off over there on the overthrow. And it's all over. So Dennis Franchione's string of losses to Texas has come to an end. The six-game winning streak of the Longhorns over the Aggies has come to an end. And his first ever win against the Longhorns in double hugs for his quarterback, Stephen McGee. They may never let go of each other.
That's good.
Well, quite a win on the road. This is not an easy place. And there's Mark Dodge. He's not an unsung hero anymore. He's just playing a hero in College Station. He had the interception that really iced the ball game. So Mack Brown's Longhorns fall to 9-3. Dennis Franchione's Aggies go to 9-3. And now the questions about the Big 12 championship representative from the South still wide open. Final score, the Aggies over the Longhorns, 12-7 here in Austin.
All those old names. Jevon Snead mentioned. He only played in that game because Colt McCoy hurt his shoulder, I think, on the one of the plays before. Colt McCoy hurting his shoulder in the big game. It happens. 2006 was that game. The Longhorns were the defending national champions. We had Selvin Young on earlier. He played on that previous team, the 2005 team, obviously, who beat USC in the title game. So they're coming off that season. Obviously, no Vince Young. 9-2 is where the Longhorns were at the time, 11 in the country. They weren't going to play for a title, but they were trying to get into a BCS game, trying to win the Big 12 South. Did not happen. You heard Michael Goodson score the touchdown, Stephen McGee, the quarterback at the time, and Dennis Francione, the head coach of the Texas A&M Aggies. That game was in Austin, and it was an 88-yard touchdown drive for the Aggies late in that game to score, and they held off the Longhorns as they tried to make a comeback. Jamal Charles scored a touchdown run, and as you heard, I think that was Brad Nessler of ABC. That win snapped a Texas six-game winning streak against the Aggies. It's been so long since they played each other. All these names almost seem like distant memories. Some people might not remember that Dennis Francione coached the Aggies. They've had several coaches since. But he was a coach of that team and was a hot name at one point in college football until things faded away for him. So that is our Aggie moment for today. And, of course, that is brought to you by Rebecca Creek Distillery. The rivalry is back November 30th. Aggies, Horns, right here on ESPN 97.5. You heard interviews this morning. You heard history with me. You'll hear more interviews throughout the week, the next couple days, as we get you ready for a game that's back, a rivalry that's back, and it means a whole hell of a lot. You got a chance to make the college football playoff with a win for the Aggies and then a win in the SEC title game. And, of course, the Longhorns have the same goal, win this game and then go win the SEC title. Enjoy Rebecca Creek Whiskey, Enchanted Rock Vodka, and Texas Ranger Whiskey to celebrate the rivalry's return. Gig 'em and hook 'em. Saturday night for this game, which is cool. So departure from past games. I think it's the best game of the weekend. There may be something more dramatic, but as far as the hype and what it might mean to the national title race, and hell, just the SEC title race, it's a big deal. South Carolina and Clemson play as well. They play early in the day. They were a little pissed off, the Clemson people were, that the game wasn't a late game. But I think it's 11 a.m. That game could solidify Clemson's spot for a potential CFP berth and maybe give South Carolina an argument for why they should be in it as a three-loss SEC team. We talk about Alabama. Maybe South Carolina should be the SEC three-loss team who gets consideration. We'll see how that game plays out. It's going to be a big weekend here in college football. So excited about that. Excited about the game on Saturday night here that we'll have on ESPN 97.5. I didn't ask this of AJ. AJ's going to be here on Friday while Joe George is in College Station getting people ready for the game. You're going to have guests there from College Station talking about the Aggies and Longhorns. AJ, are you a person who has to be sent out on errands for Thanksgiving? Like, does your mom, does family go, hey, AJ, go out and get some sugar. We forgot some sugar. Get some cheese. Is that your lot in life, or do you cook so you don't have to worry about that?
Well, I actually do cook, but my granny, like, she makes a lot of stuff, and we all pitch in, like my mom and then my aunts and uncles and stuff like that too. But like, they usually get stuff like ahead. Like, I know my mom, she got stuff for Thanksgiving like a week ago, and like same thing with my granny. But like, if there is a last minute thing, yeah, usually.
Yeah.
long story short, yeah.
Yeah. When it comes down to if something's needed, it's going to be you. I'm not an early planner. Like, I've had chicken that I'm going to make because I don't care about turkey. I don't want turkey. Get it. Beat it, turkey.
It's a little overrated.
Yeah. They're like Notre Dame. you haven't heard my comp for turkey, but turkey's like Notre Dame. It's sturdy. It's hardy. You kind of always know what you're going to get, but it ain't anything you pick first when you're talking about your proteins. Like,
right.
If you're chicken might be a thing. Maybe you're a ham person. I don't know. But turkey, you know it's overrated because the only time anyone's talking about having a full turkeys at, like, maybe twice, Christmas and Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Like, no one's relegating chicken to two days a year in the aftermath because of leftovers. Don't come at me with turkey, everyone. Damaris makes a great Cajun fried turkey. You got to spruce up turkey to make it something you're willing to eat all the time. Of course. Hey, turkey leg. Yeah, at the rodeo.
That's it.
It's special events. Mm-hmm. If it's a special event food, beat it.
Yeah, like my grandpa, he's smoking a turkey. And yeah. He usually like leaves me a turkey leg, so I'll eat that, but you know.
Yeah, but I get it. The turkey leg, understood. Right. But we talk about if your bird is relegated to a special event status, you know it's overrated.
Yeah.
You know it is. You know it is. Ain't no one making a turkey on Tuesday in March. It's not how we operate. Not how it gets done. Okay. We got one more segment to go. Remember I talked about this yesterday. 33rd, I think they're called the 33rd team, is being hired as a consultant to help the Jets find their new head coach and general manager. Well, Mike Tannenbaum, who works for 33rd team, is part of the personnel who's going to help. He used to work for the Jets, and one Rex Ryan, who currently works for ESPN, is stumping for that job. We'll play the sound from that when we get back. Told you. You know it's going to happen, or at least it's going to be given real consideration that they just get the old band back together. Woody Johnson might be comforted by those mid-2000s Jet teams and wants to bring those guys back. We will see. Maybe Tannenbaum's burnt out on working in the NFL, but it would not surprise me. So we'll get to that before we wrap it up. We'll talk some more Texans because that's a team in flux. They need some answers, and we'll see if they have them against the Jags. Just win the game. I'm at a point with them where I just say win games. I don't have any expectations about how you play, how it looks out there. Just go out there and beat the Jags and don't embarrass us. The Texans are at a point where I'm like, don't embarrass us. The Titans thing was awful. The Colts probably can't catch you if you stop embarrassing us. Find a way. No expectations going forward. They have ripped those from me. I don't believe in this team at all. I don't think they're a contender. They've got 5 weeks to change that. I don't know how many other people do. You listen to what the commentary is about them from fans and from media nationally and locally. I think all that hype has gone away. Losing the Will Levis will do that to you. So we got one more segment to go before we wrap it up. AJ and myself here with you. Sam will be in tomorrow as AJ has done his duty with the morning shows here. And then following us, obviously, Gallant and George. And they've got a new producer. First time doing a live show, I was told, at least a live show of this magnitude for 3 hours. It's the holidays, everybody. It's the holidays. It's what it is. It's what it is. Okay, we will be back.
This is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
Welcome back to the show, final segment. We will try to get some Chris Long sound in here, the former defensive end, NFL defensive end. He has, like everyone else does, a podcast. He spoke to what he believes the Texans' biggest issues are. And it isn't C.J. Stroud. Despite C.J.'s issues, his struggles, he's pointing to Texans' overall infrastructure, at least offensively, for why the quarterback isn't playing as well. So we'll hear from him, hopefully, in a little bit here. Because, as I said, it's turned. And whether Bobby Slowick is responsible fully or not, when you have a young quarterback, they are not going to blame the young quarterback. CJ would have to play like this next year too. And if there's a change at OC, then people would start to say, oh, well, okay, maybe the CJ we saw in year one isn't the real CJ. But as much as things may be weighing on him because he's not playing up to his standard, for the most part, the blame isn't going to go his way. Because of what he was last year, it's got to be someone else. I don't think it's as simple as that. Maybe it's a culmination of everything that was wrong before it started being him. But you can look at his play and go, all right, he ain't the guy that we thought. And I'll ask you, AJ, being an impartial observer, you've seen a young quarterback be hyped up and play well, and then at some point the scars start to build and people start to question him. I'm talking about Dak Prescott, your guy.
Yeah.
At one point, Dak Prescott was C.J. Stroud. He was a guy that, wow, Campbell. Now he was drafted later, but it was a guy where, wow, I can't believe the Cowboys found him. Tony Romo, you got to beat it. Dak's our guy. And he's a young quarterback on a rookie deal, and look how successful they were with Zeke. We all know the timeline of events there. But he went a couple of years before people started to go, well, Dak can't win the big one. The stuff didn't build up until there were several years going through different OCs and firing coaches before it started to fall on what was the promising young quarterback and now is the veteran who can't get it done. So do you remember that going that way with Dak?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I remember when the rookie, that was crazy. That was, like, they were, like, him and Zeke, they were legit MVP candidates, too. Like, that was, man, those were better days. But anyways, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think for CJ, though, I think he's going to be good. I mean, he was a higher draft pick, like you mentioned, too, than Dak. It's how you build the team around him, too. And then, also, when you have to pay him as well, that's the biggest thing, the biggest standpoint, because he'll be really eligible for that after next season.
Yeah, you talk about it. There was somewhat serious discussions because of the salary cap going up and quarterback pay goes. By the time CJ's eligible for a new deal, is he going to be the first $70 million per year quarterback? That's how good he was last year. That's what people are talking about, where he, because of the next one up gets paid more, he was going to be in that range. I don't know if the cap is going to accelerate to that point where that would be a viable option, but once you pay him, who else doesn't get paid?
Right.
So that's why these years were so important. Now, the Chiefs have proven, and they're a unique organization where you can go pay Mahomes, whatever, and you can start to get cheap on defense, but draft well. And you say to Tyreek, you got to go. And obviously, you keep one of those guys. You keep Kelce around, and that has led to two consecutive titles. But you're talking about having the best quarterback in all of football. Is CJ going to be that at some point? I don't know. That's what it means when you start to pay guys. How good is your quarterback? And right now, CJ looks nothing like the guy who we thought was going to, at some point, be a guy breaking the bank and maybe being the highest paid player in football. Well, here's Chris Long. Chris Long on what has happened to CJ Stroud this year.
It's a shame, and it also reinforces the point that we made a few minutes ago, is that context matters. Last year when the scheme was working and CJ wasn't – you know, getting obliterated. He looked like the next Joe Montana, and I still think he's got, you know, that rare ability in him. I'm not putting him with Joe Montana, but you know what I'm saying. They have done everything in their power this year to stunt the kid's development. I mean, his eyes are on the rush, you know, and like you could say, hey, keep your eyes downfield. But after 12 games of it, it's a survival tactic. Yep. To know who's falling at your feet, to know who's not picking up a game.
Yeah.
Nico Collins has two touchdowns in a week called back on dumb penalties. Mm-hmm. You know, one of them yesterday is in legal motion, Mixon and the receiver in motion at the same time, and like they knew it right away. And you see it on CJ Stroud's face on the sideline. He's just numb right now. There's so many things going on bad on this offense that you have to look at the coordinator, man. And I don't think they have their bye yet. Have they had their bye?
I'll answer it. No, they have not.
But the point is, like, they have to huddle up.
Next week.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they haven't had their bye.
Jacksonville, then they have a bye.
And I know he's tight with the quarterback coach, right? I know there's other guys that are in the building and call plays, right? Like, did we look at that as Bill Lazor?
Yeah.
Is there? He's called some plays in the NFL before. But they have to have a conversation about the play calling, because the play calling is not good. And I've seen teams work around worse offensive lines. There are some decent players, guys who have played good ball in the past on this offensive line, but they're not playing together, and they're doing unsound shit. Mm-hmm. They're pulling Shaq Mason to pick up an edge guy who's screaming off the edge. He's tiptoeing. He doesn't
all right,
know
that's
what
enough
he's
Chris
doing.
Long. I did say, hey, I didn't hear all of it, and we got through about a minute plus before Chris Long does what he might do on a podcast. He curses. I like how that beep came in. After.
That was poorly edited. Oh my gosh.
I know. They beeped it, but after, for some reason. It's not great by the people who edited it, that. So you heard the name pop up. You didn't hear any blame being put on the quarterback. You heard a potential call for a change. And they went down the list and said, who can call plays in that room? Who can call plays in that building? Didn't even mention Sloak by name, I believe. He just mentioned that Bill Lazor was an option. I've seen Bill Lazor call plays for my favorite team. He's not an option. At least the Bill Lazor I remember. The Bill Lazor who called plays for my team, not great. It's a different situation. Maybe he's much better off. We're talking, I don't know, maybe a decade since he was calling plays for my team. But this is where we are. This is where this team is. And the only thing they can do is play better. And some of this stuff quiets down. You know, if they rip off three in a row, win this week, and then break off a couple after the bye, all be forgotten. Because the teams they're playing beyond the Jags are going to be teams that people think can challenge them. The Jags win's not going to quiet anyone. It'll make us feel better because talking about a loss again for this team, and another embarrassing one, is not something we want to do. It's not something we want to watch. But for how loud it's getting for Bobby Slowick, breaking off a couple wins in a row and looking good offensively is going to be important. We talked about this on the morning show. The thought of him being fired was not something a lot of people considered. He was supposed to be a guy you could barely hold on to because he was going to become a head coach. There's still five games to go. So even if he's not in real trouble now, despite fans and engagement farmers calling for his head, what happens if you drop three out of your next four and you look bad offensively? And you still have the problems blocking people and your quarterback's still playing poorly, then that stuff is on the table and the percentages increase. You can't make a judgment 12 games in as far as who's safe. You've got a big chunk of the season to go and a bye to get through. This could change one way or the other really quickly. So the fortunate thing is they bought themselves a little margin for error. The division isn't good, and they've done enough against the Colts to have a three-game lead when you consider the Colts have to actually win it. They can't tie the division because of your tiebreaker advantage. So you've dropped games you shouldn't, but you're still in a position where if you flip this, can you be a two seed? Probably not. Four seed is probably what you're going to be, but you can go into the playoffs feeling a lot differently about yourself than you do right now. So that's in the future. I'm done for the day. I want to thank AJ for helping out. Gallant and George are up next. We got a new producer. Well, I'm going to wish him good luck, mostly because I know Paul, and Paul likes to call for audio. So I'm not sure where you're situated there, how much pre-work you've done, but be ready. Be ready. So you'll meet him. I ain't gonna spoil the surprise. You'll meet him when we end and they begin. So Gallant and George are up next, followed by the Killer Bees. We will continue to get you ready for A&M in Texas, and of course more Texan stuff. The Astros news of the day is Bregman got an offer, far below what he's asking for, but the Astros have made an official offer for Bregman. That's the big news. After losing Kikuchi earlier in the week, they have put in their bid. Will it be enough? Feels unlikely. AJ, right now, since this is the last day I'm working with you, is Bregman an Astro when spring training rolls around?
Well, hopefully he doesn't take this contract offer as like disrespect. Hopefully they can get it worked out. But I'm going to be optimistic and say yes.
All right. So it is funny that 26 over 6. 26 per year. 150 whatever over 6 is disrespectful, but if he's asking right. for over 200, apparently it is. Right now we're talking about something along the lines of a 7 point something million a year difference between what Bregman wants and what the Astros want to give him. Let's meet in the middle, everybody. Maybe 29. Maybe right. we make it maybe an even 30. And even 30. 180 over 6 is a nice number, right? Right?
I'd take it.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, we'd all take it. It's just a business that they're in. All right. We're done. Since we're done, what does that mean?
We did it!
We did do it. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.